Gentlemen, thank you very much. Representative Cornish, I will, as soon as I have a quorum, I will have someone move your Hotel 2840 for possible inclusion in the workforce development plan. Thank you, gentlemen. Next on the agenda, Representative Olin. House File 2606.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm here representing the City of Thief River Falls by myself at the moment.
Good job.
Which means I should be quick. Basically, what the City of Thief River Falls is asking for is a pedestrian and bicycle path, which it costs $340,000. They're proposing the $50,000 that they're paying. The end result of this path would be to connect all the quadrants of the City of Thief River Falls together, which right now they aren't by any pedestrian or bicycle path. Now, a few of you had, at least the chairman had an opportunity to be on the bonding tour, and at that time they did show this path in great detail, so I won't go through all the great detail that they did on the bonding tour. And I also do have a handout that you've all got an opportunity to look at, so unless you have questions, I will keep my comments short.
Questions of Representative Owen. I think we have a quorum, so Representative Norton moves the minutes of the February 14th Higher Education Workforce Development meeting. Any additions or corrections on the February 14th meeting? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Do we have another set of minutes? We have a minute from our January 14th meeting that we held also. Representative Haas moved the minutes of the January 14th meeting.
I do, and they're very fine minutes.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Any additions or corrections to those? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. And since we have a quorum now, I guess then that Representative Breinert would move that that House File 2606 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Workforce Development Bill. And also, Representative Breinert, would you make that House File 2840 also be coordinated in the bill?
I move House File 2606 and House File 2840 to be moved forward to the omnibus bill.
Members, any questions? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Owen. While we have you up there, do you have another bill tonight?
If I do, I don't have it with me. So you
not on this agenda. Okay, get out of here.
I think there's one coming up. You're going to have another one. I know that.
Representative Leader, House File 2609. And Representative, Representative Poppy would move that House File 2609 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Representative Leader, I have to say, on the, being on the bonding committee, that the ice arena in Crookston, when we went into the men's locker room for the University of Minnesota Crookston, convinced a lot of us you should have a new arena. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and for the members of the committee, the reason it says ice arena is the fact that this is a flood control project. The City of Crookston residents, even myself, was basically out of the floodplain for the last close to 15, 20 years. Levy attacks on ourselves. And we're unique and the only city, I think, in the state that does it. Cost me $150 a year. But basically, what we're doing is trying to close up all our flood area. And in the big flood we had in a few years ago, the city East Grand Forks, basically 8,000 people came into our new high school before it was even opened up. So what this is, well, it looks like an ice arena. The reason it is, the existing ice arenas are located right on the riverbank, and we have to tear them down and put a dike in there, either that or drive sheet piling. And for anyone that knows anything about sheet piling, that's not really the answer. It would be close to a half a mile of sheet piling. So it's more economical to tear down the old ice arenas and relocate them. And basically, Mr. Chair, that's about it. I have the city administrator, Mr. Perry, probably, if you want some comments or some further questions, we'll answer them.
Mr. Parrish, you got anything to add? Welcome to the committee.
Chair, members of the committee, I guess I would just answer any questions that you might have. You have a handout in front of you for your reference.
Members, you've got the handout. Are there any questions of Mr. Parrish or Representative Leader on the project? If not, then let's see. Who did I have make that one? Representative Hartman. Oh, Representative Poppins.
I will be happy to move House File 2609 onto the bonding committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign, motion prevails. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this doesn't jeopardize me because Austin's got flood relief in. Does that affect this project now since you made that motion?
I think she's just trying to work her way into your money, Bernie. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Angeles, I saw him here earlier. Okay, well, we'll take Representative Peterson then. House File 2651, members.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 2651.
Okay, Representative Haas moves House File 2651. Welcome to the committee, Representative Peterson, and guests, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. Bill, I'll spend the time with the witnesses who drove down from Yolo Medicine, the west end of the state today, for a new ag education and exhibit center to be located in Yolo Medicine County near the city of Canby. I have a resolution from the county commissioners. You have the yellow piece on your packet there, and with me tonight is Dick and Evelyn Rainier from city of Canby, and I'll let Mr. Rainier describe the project with as much time as you are willing to let him consume.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rainier.
Yes, thank you for having the opportunity to come down here and testify in front of you people. It is also the first time that we've been down here, but it's still an honor to be down here. Well, we're after, we've been working on the project for over 8 years, and I think it's highly got to the point where we do need some action on the money that we're asking for on this, because we've got matching grants with the federal. If we go on with this, we can get this project done and get it done very well. And I want to turn it over to Evelyn here, and she's going to explain what is going on in this project as fast as we know how. I know you're limited for time here, but we got all night, but you guys say you only got 5 minutes.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you've driven as far as you have. So,
and remember, Mr. Chair, Mr. Rainier's an auctioneer, so if you want him to talk fast,
we can do that too. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the privilege to be here. I don't know that Dick said I should do this, but I don't. Anyway, bear with me. What we're planning is to preserve the agricultural area and the machinery and the equipment that is out in rural areas. We don't have a facility where the equipment will be housed indoors. Explain. We want to be able to show our next generations following us what we have done. There are some technologies that are being lost. If we don't preserve this, they're in manufacturing, but maybe someone locally could use it, or if we're location-wise, we want to preserve that, okay. Location-wise, it's on King Trails that you have designated for western Minnesota, goes from the Canadian border down to the Gulf of Mexico. So we have a flow of traffic that will be there. We don't want to come back every year and ask for money or go to the county and ask for money to sustain this building. We want to put campsites in there. We need campsites. If we want tourism, we need a place for them to stay. We have 35 to 40 places next to us, and they're always filled up. Every single weekend, you can't get in there in summertime of any sort. They're always filled up. How can we encourage tourism to our area if we have no place to stay? We're looking at putting campsites, approximately 30 of them, with a water and sewer in there, and that's where, and then they can enjoy the building. The building will be multi-purpose. It will be large enough to house recreational area, such as banquets and that sort of thing. We will use educational area for the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, extension service. We're going to have a balcony where we can show movies as to how things are done. We can have pictures, but until you have a moving picture of it, it doesn't actually show. We have tracking equipment that will still actually be there. We want to preserve some prairie grasses and that sort of thing in an area because these things are all disappearing. People are putting the cars to the native prairies, and we want to preserve that. It's just a preservation area and a center where we can promote the ag land of western and southwestern Minnesota. It's not just yellow medicine and salty. We have traveled up and down Highway 75, and the things that are very limited. We saw one museum, and the things that are there are all standing out in the rain and rushing away. The things before you know it, they're gone. So that's what we're doing. And maybe get
those embellished. And we're asking for $900,000, and that will be, we're asking the federal government to do the same thing. We've been in touch with Colin Peterson, that is our representative in that district, and if it would be of a war, we'd have had money a long time ago, but he's assured us, practically assured us, sometime or another in the near future, we'll get all the money we need on this project, matching the state. So what we're asking from you is for $900,000, and if we get $900,000 from the federal, we'll be on our way, and we'll set up a respectable building in a respectable place for southwestern Minnesota, eastern South Dakota, that will bring a lot of business into Minnesota, and that is a big thing. And you know very well that we got a lot of good rich ground over there, but we don't get a whole lot of big aid out there because we're thinly populated. We understand that. But I do feel sorry for our representatives that work so hard, and the little they do get out there isn't all that great. So if we can get a little punch here, it'll make everybody vote and vote. The Republicans and the Democrats, they vote blocked us all the way on this, and they're right with us all the way. And thank you for having us here today.
Well,
anybody else here?
One of our board members is up there. Jim Stone is up there.
Oh, Jim. Yeah, he's one of our members of this group that we got set up for.
Well, thank you very much for coming. Do you have a nonprofit status set up for this already?
It's in the process of going, yes. John Myers, who is Dr. John Myers, you probably are familiar with him. He's at another meeting in Minneapolis. He was trying to be here tonight. He said, I will be there in about a half hour. Well, that was at 6 o'clock. He said, I don't think I'm going to make it at 6:30. So anyway, he is a project manager. You'll see that in the booklet, and I think many of you have worked with John Myers before. I think that's a name you're familiar with.
Okay, other questions? If not, then Representative Haas renews his motion that House File 2651 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus recommendations to the budget committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
Good
you
luck
very much.
To you.
Thank you.
Representative Anzelf, come back in the room. Yes, he's there. Representative Mahoney moves that House File 2796 be recommended to pass.
Thank you,
and held over for bonds. Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for giving us time to share with you the a project, an exciting project that actually began with a bonding approval in the 06 session. This is converting municipal solid waste to energy in International Falls, Minnesota, located along the Canadian border in Coochie County, one of the only counties in the state that's losing population and in need of jobs. When jobs can be created with clean energy, when jobs can be created through eliminating the need for landfills, when jobs can be created by eliminating the need to transport municipal solid waste hundreds of miles away, it's a win-win-win, and that's what this is. In the last session of the legislature, we were able to appropriate $400,000 for a study to study the feasibility of this green technology, job-creating technology in International Falls, and the gentlemen that I'm pleased to be with here are the two people from a company called Coronal, John Howard and Steve Korsted, who are actually doing the nuts and bolts of the study to determine the feasibility of the project. And so with that, we'd be happy to handle any questions you might have. The study is not complete, but so far, the results and the inquiry is exciting, and we expect to be back soon with additional requests of the legislature, requests that will ultimately end up with a partnership between the federal government, the city of International Falls, state government, and hopefully a Boise Cascade paper mill, which is the largest employer in International Falls. Jobs we want to retain, and this project helps us retain those jobs at Boise. Thank you.
Representative Anderson, is this a project that former Representative Anderson had been working on?
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for asking that question. Yes.
It is.
This was one of the last several projects that my predecessor, Irv Anderson, was working on at the time of his retirement.
And what's the total cost of this project for either the general area?
I'll defer to my colleagues answer that question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Corstead here. $30 million.
Okay. So $30 million. And how many is it how many megawatts facility is it?
It'll produce synthetic gas that will then be used by Boise Cascade to replace their natural gas consumption. So we're not going all the way to electricity. It's a synthetic gas that comes out of the garbage, and Boise then is real excited about having that reliable source right there with energy independence and not having to use natural gas.
Other questions? If not, Representative Mahoney renews his motion then that House File 2796 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Workforce Development Policy Bill. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much for
very interesting project, Representative Ramsdale. Representative Conan. House File 2496. And Representative Bly moves that House File 2496
so moved.
Be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Conan, and your guest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill has an open appropriation, and the amount we're looking for is $200,000. I don't know if you want to, how you want to proceed. You want to amend the bill to that, or
Representative Hogg moves the. That line 1.8 after the dollar sign, $200,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That's how we'll take care of it, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have with me this evening Mr. Tim Bell, the chairman of the board of the Yellow Medicine County Farm Machinery and Transportation Museum in Hanley Falls, and I'll let him explain the project to the committee.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Rokovina. Members, I give you a brief, as I can, history here. The Minnesota's Machinery Museum, there's a little green bag, I think, in all your packets.
Oh, yeah.
In there, we put, in there, I have a brochure of the museum, and we've completed 27 years, successful years, I might add, as a agriculture and transportation museum. We're located in Hanley Falls, Minnesota, a small town, less than 300 people. In 1980, the schoolhouse, which had been closed, it's a 1939 WPA building, concrete building, was given to Yellow Medicine County. Yellow Medicine County turned it into an agriculture museum. Since that time, we've built three steel buildings on the grounds. It's about a 6.5 acre grounds where we have stored inside of that farm equipment, tractors, antique cars, and in the schoolhouse itself, we have set up as different rooms in the would be in a house, parlor, kitchen, and a store, many things relating back to the history of the area. One of the problems we have is handicapped accessibility with three stories. The main floor everyone can get to, the other ones were with only stairways, we can't utilize them the way we'd like to. We've put into the federal government for funding for an elevator to put in there. We had the Yellow Medicine County hired the Veteran Johnson, some architects, to come look at the project. And they said that the first thing we need to do and need to do immediately is upgrade our electrical system. They said the electrical system in there is in the perfect location. It's in a museum, but it says it should be on display and not in use. So we're looking for money to upgrade our electrical system and also put in the air exchange system so that we can start working on the project to get an elevator for handicap accessibility for the building. Just one other thing, we have, as far as membership, we have at the present time 207 lifetime members. We have 13 businesses that are corporate members, and we have 20 people who are sustaining members who give a substantial contribution every year to operate the museum. We have an operating budget of $58,000. We get $21,000 from the county. The balance we raise through fundraisers and things like that to keep the museum going. And last year, through special events and just visitors coming to the museum, we had about 4,500 people go through the museum itself. We have, in every spring, we bring school tours in. Fifth grade kids from neighboring schools come in, and at that time we get a bunch of local people come in and answer questions and give the kids the tour. So it's good as far as multi-generational experience for everybody. So if there's any more questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I noticed you got some positive comments from the Historical Society, and I'm wondering, has the Minnesota Historical Society ever helped you out?
Minnesota Historical Society has worked with us very closely. We have a letter of support for them on this project. We've gone through them for other special things that we've done, and they said that due to budget cuts, they don't have extra money at this time either. It seems like everybody gives us that answer. They don't have extra money at this time, but the State Historical Society has been very cooperative and worked with us on other projects, and we've always been very thankful for their help. But at this time, they said they didn't have the money to help us out right now.
Okay, any other questions, Representative McFarland?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering on the line 1.12 and 1.13, it talks about having an equal amount committed from non-state sources. How are you doing on your fundraising?
We have a commitment from the county. Unfortunately, looks like we could come up with about a 10% match at this time. So we're twisting arms and doing everything we can, but we're not having a lot of success at it. If that could be changed to a 10% match locally, we'd be very happy.
Representative McFarland, you want to amend the amended bill? Well, another question. I know it's tough out there, and the climate isn't that good here down at the Capitol, but Representative Mahoney, but we'll try to see what we can do for you. Representative Mahoney?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Are you firing up your steam tractors?
Yes. We have a thrashing show the second full weekend of September every year. It's a three-day show, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thrashing, log cutting, about anything you can imagine.
Just one very quick question. How many steam tractors do you have?
We have two steam tractors. We have about 60 smaller, what you call antique tractors, and we have 10 Minneapolis and Avery and Twin City and Ottman Taylor.
I'll have to get out there.
Huge tractors, you know, with the 12-foot high drive wheels.
Well, maybe
any of you could come out there, I will personally make sure you get the best tour you can imagine.
Well, maybe if we have any money left on the committee, we'll go out there for a committee meeting on the museum weekend.
We will. You will enjoy yourself, I guarantee it.
Okay, Representative Bly renews his motion that House Bill 2496, as amended, be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Moll. House File 2713. Representative Moll moves that House File 2713 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Welcome to the committee. Of course, it's your committee, so
right.
Welcome you.
I do come here occasionally.
Yes, sir. You're here tonight, I know.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have the good fortune here of, again, coming forward to support the Bemidji Regional Event Center. This is a very exciting opportunity. It's a partnership between the university, Bemidji State University, and the city of Bemidji. We've been working on this for years, and the legislature invested $3 million last bonding bill for planning and design money. The community has invested that money wisely, has come up with a very sound plan to locate the facility on the south shore of Lake Bemidji, accentuating a already beautiful site that will be enhanced by this economic development. We'll also provide a home for BSU hockey and a convention center to highlight our regional center, and we'll connect the Paul Bunyan Trail through it. But I am just the legislator here, and we have a local expert, John Carlson, who I've been working on this project also for years, has been with this since the inception, so I'll turn it over to him. You also have in your package, you have a handout that we gave you that John will be referring to, some highlights of it.
Carlson, welcome.
Go ahead, Ben. Thank you, Chairman Rukavina. I am John Carlson from Bemidji, and members of the committee, thank you. And again, I would like to echo what Representative Moe said, and thank you very much for the $3 million in planning money that we received in 2006 bonding so that we were able to do the proper planning for this project. This project has been going on for in excess of 10 years, and it wasn't until the cooperation of the Bemidji State University with the city of Bemidji and the local business community to get this to come to fruition. And so this particular phase of the project now has been going on for a little over 2 years. The Bemidji area in north central Minnesota has historically been a distressed region, and thanks to the work of a lot of people, the city of Bemidji and the strong support of Bemidji State University, we are gradually becoming quite a regional center based out of Bemidji for the north central region. We're the regional center for education, we're the regional center for government services, and we're the regional center for retail services. The one component that we're lacking at this point in order to attract good high-paying jobs is a regional entertainment facility. And once we are able to secure that, that will help us in turn to be able to get other high-paying jobs in our area. Our local North Central Regional Health Services has told us many times that as they're looking for physicians in the nature of cardiologists and of that type, one of the questions they ask coming into the area is, what amenities do you have that we can take advantage of? And when we talk about the possibility of having this regional event center, that gets their interest. It gives them a venue where they can go to shows and to sporting events and many other kinds of entertainment facilities that you would have to drive now many hundreds of miles to get to at great expense. The other thing that this project is going to do in the near term, for the first 2 years of the project during construction, it will provide almost 200 jobs in the construction area. Upon completion, there will be about almost 200 jobs that will be permanent, full-time, and part-time jobs that will be employed at the facility. What we're really concerned about right now is BSU hockey. As many of you are aware of, Bemidji State University's hockey program, we've been a Division III hockey program, then Division II hockey program, and in the last 5 years, a Division I hockey program. It's a 52-year tradition of hockey in Bemidji State University with 13 national championships. Bemidji State University is known throughout the country as a powerhouse in the hockey community.
We are on the verge of losing that program. It is critical at this juncture that we get this facility. Without this facility, we're not going to be able to continue the scheduling partnership with the WCHA team because they don't want to come to the facilities that we currently have. It's just not up to their standards. By gaining this facility, we will continue along the lines of the scheduling partnership with the WCHA, and the expanded seating capacity of 4,000 seats will enable us to be able to finance the program and also to be able to help finance the women's program. The final piece of this is, as Representative Mose pointed out, is being located on the south shore of Lake Bemidji. It provides the final piece of the connection of the trail that goes all the way from Brainerd all the way to International Falls, and it's an important piece that I know the DNR has been looking for. And by the city went ahead and purchased that property at $13 million, and they closed that at the end of January, enabling us to move forward this project. It's a $91 million project, and what we're looking for is a hand up. We're not looking for a handout. We're only looking at less than 30% of this project help from the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much for hearing us, and we take any questions.
Questions of the witnesses. I have one. Representative Moore, you have a 0.5% sales tax increase, right? What is your current sales tax? You have a city sales tax?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bemidji currently has a 0.5% sales tax that was passed by the legislature and by a referendum for parks and trails. That's set to expire in a couple of years. We then passed an extension of that sales tax, already passed that on the ballot in Bemidji, and we have legislation before the body, or before the legislature here, to continue the sales tax that we already have. Both of those were passed by popular referendum in Bemidji.
So when the first 0.5% runs off for the parks and trails, then this one
would start.
It
would
continue, and it's still a 0.5%.
It wouldn't be an additional sales tax, correct.
And that would and that's enough to cover your part of the debt service.
That's enough to cover way more than half of the private construction cost of this facility.
Question. Representative
Dem. This amount, is this just for the event center? Are we talking about? I'm looking at your map here. You have a lot of other buildings here too.
Chairman Rukavina and Representative Detmer, the total project is $91 million. It includes the $13 million land purchase that the city has already made. It includes a $62 million for the facility itself, and then the rest would be for infrastructure needs.
This is currently the city of Nymore, is it?
Yeah, correct.
But spoken from a Bemidji State grad, Nymore, as you know, is part of the city of Bemidji.
Part of. We're not. I'm not tracking this one, but then.
Representative Bryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moe, I'm wondering if you have plans if you don't get the sales tax extension. I know sales tax extensions aren't terribly popular with the tax committee at the moment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Briner, the tax committee, both the House and the Senate, passed our extension last year. It was in the tax bill, and because we passed it by popular referendum, as you know, that there is not a lot of support for that now. They've passed language in the tax bill, and they will do it again to essentially close the door on these. But since the rules were out there for communities previous to this, and they have jumped through the hoop of actually passing it on popular referendum, they said, okay, we will accept these, but afterwards, we're not going to change the rules on you after you've already jumped through all the hoops to get it done.
Okay, Representative Moe then renews his motion on House File 2760. He recommends to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Any other questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank
you. Oh, and then we've got to stick around for the rest of the meeting or we're going to reconsider this.
Mr. Chairman, I will need to be bouncing back and forth between here and Environment Finance, which is hearing the Parks and Trails bill, which many of you have built in, so I will do my best for that.
Is Representative Howard?
Yes.
Here? Representative Howard. And Representative Dunster moves that House File 2814. He recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. bill. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House File 2814 is a request for, I haven't looked at it in a couple of days, I think it's $1.15 million for a water line from the city of Walker to the Agua Ching facility. Many of you people that have been here for more than 2 years have heard of Agua Ching. In your packet or handed out to you recently, there should be a letter from Washington, from Senator Coleman's office, showing that the Department of Health and Human Services has given us the green light on our critical access hospital that we passed 2 years ago here. And the other letter is one from the Department of Human Services here in Minnesota, finally giving us a day that they will vacate the facility. They've been holding us by a carrot on a stick for the last 3 years. They finally decided that on April 15th, they'll decide within 30 days what day to leave. And that's when they want us to sign the closing. Unfortunately, the Cass County and the city of Walker can't sign that package until all these things are tied up in some fashion through the legislature. And I am working with admin, I'm working with Chair Hausman, and with the PFA to make sure that this goes through the process. And it may be a little more than 1.15, maybe a little less. We'll know that in the next couple, 3 weeks.
And Representative House, this isn't on the PFA list anywhere?
Mr. Chairman, no, it is not on the list, but Mr. Kuhlman has assured me that they have other grants available and other avenues that we can work with, and that he has assured me that his staff is actually working on it now, on a process that will satisfy Cass County enough that they will sign the dotted line and accept the property. So I'm putting my faith in Mr. Kuhlman.
Any questions, then? If not, then Representative Gunther renews his motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative. House. Representative Doty. House File 757. Representative Doty, you're on. Representative Hamilton. House File 2583. Representative Nornis moves that House File 2583 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. It's a pleasure to see my good moderate Republican friend from down south.
I appreciate the invite and all the warm, happy, smiling faces. So I'll tell you what, Mr. Chair and committee members, I won't take up a lot of your time. I did bring along with me Crystal Dunker from Lakefield, Minnesota. She's with the Prairie Ecology Bus Center. And basically what this is a vehicle for understanding and appreciating the natural wonders in our own backyard. It serves over 32 counties and over 100 different towns. And so if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Dunker.
Welcome to the committee.
Dunker, thank you, Mr. Chair. Pardon?
Just say your name for the team.
Dunker. Crystal Dunker.
Welcome.
I'm the director of the Prairie Ecology Bus Center and also representing Jackson County down in the southern reaches of our state. I would like to direct your attention to the brochure that has the ecology bus on it. And if you would be so kind as to open that and turn to the back side. In a glance, you can see that our programming spans the southern and western region of the state. And since the very first day of our programming, we began with a 12-county service area providing outdoor environmental education programs to preschoolers on up to senior citizens. And I did a quick count last week to see how much we have expanded, and we are now serving, as Representative Hamilton mentioned, upwards of 30-plus counties throughout our region. So our program has naturally a quite a large span. And there's also a second handout that was given to you. It's legal-sized paper. There is a picture of a new Nature and Science Center rendering that looks somewhat like a barn. And, in fact, we do have a barn on our property that we are looking to renovate into a classroom, lecture hall, and build out from there a new exhibit hall and office space for staff to support the programs that we provide throughout the region. And it was pointed out to me just this morning that in Sunday's Pioneer Press, there was an article on the front page that said, "No time for nature, fewer young Minnesotans using state parks and trails." And this is not news for any of us who are working in outdoor education. Throughout our programs over the many years we've been in business, we are seeing fewer kids each year who understand what the outdoor actually is. By age 10, studies show that 10-year-olds can identify 200 corporate logos, and yet very few kids can identify the trees that are in the front yard. And this is nothing new, and it's only getting worse. And the more disconnected kids become from the environment, there's repercussions to be had, both emotionally and developmentally and physically. And our programs help to, number one, put kids in touch with nature and help them to understand the world that's out there. Now, just as one center, we can't do all of this alone. We actually need the support of educators, of youth leaders, and of parents. And what this Nature and Science Center project that we're proposing will do would allow us the space to train teachers to take their kids outdoors, to help them become comfortable in teaching in the outdoors and making their lessons more relevant by taking those children outside. We're also looking at the development of the center is also providing an avenue for homeschool families to have a place to go to offer science education. This will also be a training center for adults on natural resources. There's just a whole host of things that this community center can provide for a regional science training center. And this would also support the Ecology Best programs as well. Currently, our office space is quite limited. We are at the max of what we can provide for staff. Just Friday, actually, we pulled three raccoons out of our walls. The building that we're in is an old farmhouse, and it's not very conducive to increasing our staff to meet the demands and the requests that we have for programming, and that includes our school programs that we do. It also includes the teacher training workshops that we provide, the adult education programs, and the homeschooling and community education classes that we provide throughout the region. So with this, we have the Nature and Science Center project, as well as developing the park that we're in into a regional training center as a whole, becoming a park that helps educate people about what we have for resources.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. One of the questions I had, you answered. I didn't know what you had already for facilities. So you have an old house.
We have an old farmhouse that is located within a county park, and that's home base for us.
Insulated with raccoons.
Insulated with raccoons and squirrels.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The question then I would have. Well, first of all, I have a prairie wetlands learning center in my community, so this sounds very similar to what we have. Who actually owns this facility and how much? I guess that's the question.
Jackson County owns our facility, and they provide us the space to operate our programs out of. And so this facility would be owned by Jackson County Parks.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many homeschoolers are there in your area?
It's hard to get a good number on it because they're not as well organized as they are up in the metro area and out in southeast Minnesota. I've had individual families contact me, and they are a loosely organized group. They're not official in any way, so I can't really get a handle on the numbers. But in Jackson County alone, I've been contacted by probably a dozen different families looking for programs, and in other counties surrounding that, they are also looking for a place to have access to scientific equipment that they can use, microscopes, for example. And the more that they talk with each other, the more calls I get. And right now we don't have a place to bring them in that's large enough to accommodate homeschool training for them.
Are you talking 50?
At least, yes.
Representative Bryan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put a word in. Mankato Area Public Schools has used this program for a number of years very successfully, and we've been very happy with the quality of the program.
Thank you. I'll actually be teaching in Mankato tomorrow.
So you get all around it.
We're on the road an awful lot, yes.
You got a nice bus.
It's a fabulous teaching tool, and it allows us
beautiful,
to take kids out.
Beautiful brochure, too.
Thank you. Our ecology
should see a union bug on it.
We are currently underway with the plans to replace our ecology bus, and so the brochure that you have is actually for our bus campaign, but I wanted to have the map available for you to see just the scope of the area that we cover in the state.
Other questions? Then Representative Norris renews this motion that House File 2583 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Other questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Representative Doty, back to you. House File 757. let's see. Representative Welty, moves House File 757 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Speaking tonight on behalf of the Tri-County Regional Service Center to be located in Upland, Minnesota, the bonding committee had the privilege of touring that, and what they got to see was a senior center so overcrowded that it's to speak to them, you had to put them in two rooms. They saw the steep stairs that senior citizens have to go down to play pool or to do their crafts or to weave the rugs that so many people that were there that day bought. They saw a library that's so small we couldn't all even eat at once from the committee. And they saw a community of roughly 400 citizens. And they saw a kitchen about probably the size of two of the tables that you're sitting at, where they prepare roughly 350 to 400 meals every day for senior citizens at their center, other centers, the Todd County Detention Center, and dozens of what we call meals on wheels. Board members from all three counties in the area that this serves, that's Morrison County, Todd County, and Stearns County, have all expressed their support for this project because this is truly a regional services area. What doesn't show, even if you go there, like the bonding committee did, was the how much worse it's going to be real soon. The percentage in Minnesota of those 65 and over is currently about 12.4%. In the immediate Morrison County surroundings of this Tri-County Services area, it's 15.6%, and in the area that they serve, it's 18.5%, so half again the average for the state. The percentage of those 65 and over that are below poverty in that area is 18.5%. The state average is 8.2%. These are poor people. They are elderly people. They rely on the services that they receive there or would receive there if the area was big, if the service center was big enough to serve them. They rely on those services to stay in their own homes. If this project goes forward, those elderly people can continue to live in their own homes, have socialization, have nutritious meals. And if it doesn't, many of those same people will be in nursing homes. The 6 years before my election, I served that area as part of my service area as senior advocate. Those people are the reason I ran. I see that what it does to their lives if they can't remain in their own homes, and I see what it does to the state budget. And we have a chance to deal with both of those. The number of people served cannot grow any further. But the need is projected by our county board and by our Region 5 area to increase dramatically every single year for the next decade. So we have a problem. We're at capacity or exceeded capacity. We need the help of this issue to go forward. I will stand for any specific questions you might have.
Representative Doty, could you give us that number again, how many meals that they do, the Meals on Wheels, and then for other senior centers in the area and the jail too?
And the Todd County Jail besides, yes. They do between 350 and 400 on an average day there.
And is this every day or so many days a week?
This is at least 5 days a week. And I'm maybe, it may be more. Five for sure.
Now, I have to ask a very serious question here. Is this the senior center that my roommate Al Junkie's mother goes to?
This is indeed the same senior center.
All right. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Doty. What is there a local match to the county board for this?
The local citizens have raised a great deal of money. The city has approved a payment of a couple thousand dollars. The private citizens in the area have raised, I believe, $10,000 at present time. Just a city of 400 people, is, you know, it's not far from your district. You know, that's just a pretty poor, pretty small area. So.
And Mr. Chair, follow up. So is this $500,000 that's procured here? Is that for a add-on or is that for a reconstruction of the site?
This would be new construction, so we would have construction jobs, obviously. This would add capacity to the senior center. It would add capacity to the Great River Library branch, which is in located in Uppsala. It would add capacity for that kitchen that we talked about so that they can serve more people and keep them in their homes. In addition, the local clubs that are now going out of town to have even a meeting of their service clubs would be able to stay home. There's a few extra bonuses like that, of course. But they're also looking at some other, possibly, if they get interest that, from business at the time, that could be added on to that for additional community businesses and so on. So they, and again, I want to stress, we have letters of support, and they were in attendance when the bonding committee was there from three separate counties. This is not a local town project by any stretch. They serve a wide area on the map.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't catch it. What's the total cost then?
Total cost of the bonding request is half.
No, total cost of the whole
project,
you know?
They're estimating probably $600. Now, if they pick up some private business that would move into that, if the city decides they need some, you know, maybe they get some help.
Other questions? If not, then let's see. Who made this motion? I can't remember. Representative Welty. Representative Welty, would you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that House File 757. Recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion.
There you go. Sounds good to me. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Members, thank you for your time. Good luck with your job the rest of the evening.
Thank you. Actually, we're moving pretty good, members. Much better than I thought we would. Representative Murphy, House File 2793, and let's see. Representative Gunter, this has been around long enough. Representative Gunter moves. This is great for the city of Duluth. We have a Southern Republican moving the deck. This is wonderful cooperation. And I hear Representative Gunter moves that House Law 2793 he recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. And Representative Murphy has an amendment that should have been, she had the bill redrafted, and they forgot to leave out, or they did leave out, excuse me. So, Ms. Novak, would you read the amendment to the committee, and then we'll have someone move the amendment. Does Representative Murphy, are you on my committee again or no? Is this the ad hoc member?
I want to come.
You're always here as my ad hoc member, I think. But I think they pulled you off, didn't they, and put you on some other finance committee as a full member?
I'm ex officio.
Well, then maybe you can move it. I don't know if you can or not. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment is on page 1, line 9. After the word equip, insert capital improvements and. And on that same line, after the word the, at the beginning of the next sentence, insert the same words, capital improvements and. So the sentence would, the end of the sentence would be, and equip capital improvements and renovations to the Duluth Convention Center, period. The capital improvements and renovations must.
Okay. Members, Representative Bly moves that amendment. Any questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you've heard about this project in the past. It's passed the Senate. It's passed the House. The governor recommends it. The Duluth Convention and Entertainment Center is different than other projects in that the deck is a state authority. The governor appoints four members to the DEC board. And sometimes people have forgotten that it is a state authority. Dan Russell is here to talk about the DEC very, very quickly and answer any questions.
Welcome, Mr. Russell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I did pass out an update
for this session, for this special legislature that it was distributed, and I do want to point out the union bug on the back page, lower right.
He represents Gunter, what happens from one end of the state to the other.
Isn't that amazing?
Representative Rukavina told me I only had 2 minutes, so I will be very, very brief. The need continues to grow. We've been down for several sessions now. The facility is over 42 years old. To put that in perspective, the St. Paul Civic Center in St. Paul, the Metropolitan Sports Center in Bloomington, kind of both ancient memories now, were built well after our facility back in the early 60s. Our local math still works. We had a referendum for a tax increase of our 0.75 food and beverage tax at the request of the governor. And that passed 61% to 39% for a tax increase, I think, pretty convincingly. And that local math still works with UMD as a full partner here to come up with the 50% match. Their contribution from their athletic department over the course of the local bonds is well over $16 million. Our environmental mission goes way beyond just this. It's something that we take great pride in. We heat our entire facility with waste heat right now. It'll be announced next week that we're winning the state award for environmental leadership. We're very proud of that. That's something that we're known for. Our goal here is to far surpass the guidelines that you have set up, and we're looking at reducing energy costs of at least 50% over any comparable arena in the country. And if we can keep it on track this year, it will be the first LEED certified arena in the world. Our design team of Stanius Johnson, our local partner in HOK, are totally committed to that. And finally, the luxury of the delays, a nice way to put it, we've been pre-funding design and we've been working very, very hard. So this project, we will be in the ground this fall. We're looking at, if funding is approved during this session, having the first phase groundbreaking in September. We do have a project labor agreement in place with all of our projects down at the desk. We're looking at 300 good trade jobs for 2 years and trade jobs that we can get going this year. So thank you for your past support. I'm certainly here to answer any questions and look forward to working with all of you during the session.
Mr. Russell, I've never asked this question. I was thinking about it the other day. So does this funding proposal include the demolition of the old arena part of this? Or is that going to stay on? And
Mr. Chair, we take great pride that we've kept that building up. I mean, it's antiquated in lots of ways, but it has a bright future. We have a new roof on it. Last year, we had anticipated funding for a new ice floor. A good friend of yours, Mr. Rodrigo, the best in the world at putting in ice floors, came down. And
I'm going to have to tell him that, Ed.
Well, he is. We haven't paid him to paint it yet, so I'm trying to buy another week. but we have a bright future there. To give you an idea how big we are, we're a civic center. We fill up every inch. This year is a record year for us. Next week, weekend on Saturday alone, we have a regional quarterfinal Section 7 hockey game at 10 in the morning, 1 at noon. The women are playing St. Cloud at 3, and the men are playing Colorado College that evening. On top of that, we have a convention, and we have the Minnesota Pool Players Tournament with 168 pool tables in our facility. And that's typically how it is. We aren't a big arena. We're a civic center. We have an agreement to be the emergency response center for St. Louis County. We're just as likely to have a DARE graduation or a convention for the homeless as an Eagles concert. So we're a very multi-purpose and regional facility. But to answer your question, yes, that existing arena will have another 30, 40 years of use.
Okay, Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to hear that. I have fond memories of that building. I shook George Bush's hand in that building. So, the president? Yeah.
Which one?
Which may not be important to you, Mr. Chair, but it was nice.
No, I didn't. I wasn't being facetious. Which Bush? George?
Oh,
you know, there's
the current president. The current president, the young one.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering. Oh, that's all?
There would have been more if the building had been slated for demolition. I would have gone on longer, but.
Any other questions? If not, Representative Gunther renews his motion that House Bill 2793, as amended, be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Any questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Mr. Russell, who are the four members appointed by the governor?
Greg Fox from UND, vice chancellor that he's worked with you on a variety of projects. Bob Eaton, a long-term Republican originally appointed by Bernie Carlson. Dave McMillan, who many of you know, who is the vice president of Minnesota Power, and a local broadcast salesperson up there, sales manager, Deb Messer from WDIO-TV.
Do you think there's any chance that the governor finally would appoint me on there next time there's an opening?
I would love to have. I thought it would make my job more fun than to have you on that board.
Is there a requirement that they be residents of Duluth and we'd lose our chair?
I think that would take an amendment.
Don't move.
Was that to lose the chair or not to lose the chair?
It'd be quiet now.
Let's see. I'll move that House Press 348 be taken off the list. And House Press 2595 and Representative Haas, you might as well come up with both of yours. I thought I saw him here. He was here, but he left. Huh? Okay. Representative Poppy. Representative Poppy moves that House File 2764 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. In the omnibus vote, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Tonight we are here because Austin has had repetitive flooding over the years. Most recently we had a major flood in the fall of 2004. You have a packet that was distributed earlier that we will be referring to. Actually with me today we have two people, Jim Herm, who is the city administrator, and Don Erickson, who is the city engineer. And I will turn it over to Mr. Erickson, who will be able to share his expertise regarding this.
Welcome, Mr. Erickson. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We did have a packet we passed out earlier tonight. I'd just like to take a few minutes and describe the flood history in Austin. Since 1978, Austin has experienced our five floods of record. And these floods have been occurring midsummer, early fall versus the spring runoff that we are normally associated with flooding. After the 2004 flood, which we experienced millions of dollars of damages, the loss of two lives, the city of Austin did develop a comprehensive flood program to deal with the situation. Prior to that, the city of Austin acquired approximately 300 residential properties and moved them out of the floodplain. After the 2004 flood, we experienced a lot of damage to commercial and industrial property in Austin. The project we're here asking to receive consideration for tonight involves a structural project of walls and berms that would protect what we call our North Main area. In this North Main area, we have a large portion of our industrial and commercial property. The Hormel Foods flagship plant is located in this area. They employ 1,550 people. They process 19,000 hogs every day. During the 2004 flood, we had to shut the plant down. As we were standing there trying to make that decision, they were very supportive of it, but they told me that it had an economic impact to them of about $600,000 per day, so just to make sure that I was right. And so that very brought a lot of concern to me at that time. They purchased about $3 million of hogs every single day from the surrounding agricultural community. So it's a big impact to not only Austin, but the surrounding area. Quality Pork Processors is also part of this facility. They employ 1,400 people. Hormel Corporate Office South, 200 people. FAM Museum is located there. ACC, which is a food packaging plant, they employ about 275 people. They were closed down for approximately 3 months after this flood. They experienced a little over $4 million of damages. Mayo Medical Center, the infrastructure that serves Mayo Medical Center was threatened by this, very close to shutting them down. We had numerous other commercial businesses that were impacted by that. So the project benefit, obviously a big economic consideration for Austin with this project.
realizing that we had to develop our own plan, we received legislative approval for a local option sales tax in 2006. That was passed in 2006, implemented in April of 2007, currently generating between $900,000 and $950,000 per year for this that's dedicated towards flood control. The project we're looking at has a price tag of $10 million. We're looking for approximately $5 million, and we're proposing to fund the other 50% with our local option sales tax. I said a lot real quick there. I think probably what I'd like to do is just have you look at the last picture of the handout. This is the area that we're proposing to protect with this project. And I think by spending the time and energy towards flood mitigation today, we can lessen the cost of disasters in the future. And this is really important for our community. And, Mr. Chairman, the majority of these jobs are union jobs.
Well, members, I was down there when the bonding tour was there in, I think, was it this fall? I can't remember now. Yeah, late fall. And I couldn't believe the marks on some of the buildings where you were showing us where the water level was, because it was amazing that anything could be salvaged after that. So it's certainly a necessary project. Representative Poffy, is there money somewhere in the DNR's flood bill for part of this project?
I believe that there probably is. I know that we have this bill designated as a deed, but I believe it would be, that's what it says.
Yeah, we do have the DNR is coming to Austin this week, but it's our understanding that there's $1 million in the DNR and that $15 million flood mitigation dollars that the governor has proposed for the DNR, and there's $1 million in that for Austin.
This one. Okay. Was it Gunter first? Tim Gunter and then Mahone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know I toured the flood area in 2004, and there were a lot of infrastructure problems in downtown, a lot of storm sewer and sanitary sewer problems because of the flood, and that's what causes a lot of problems in houses and it was in public buildings. This committee is responsible for stuff like that, and I can easily see where the amount could be even more than that.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Poppy, some of them appropriation is for wastewater and things like that. So, are you on the TFA list anywhere?
Yes, we are.
Okay. You know.
Yes, we've requested funds through PFA as well.
But I mean, on their priority list, are you on that, like above 40 some points or anything?
I'm not sure.
Well, we'll find that out tomorrow, I guess. We've got it. Hearing Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The money that you're asking for, is that to take care of this last page? I think that's what I heard, and I just wanted to make sure.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, then? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment for those of you who did go to Rutherford earlier this fall to see the flooding there. Their main street also was impacted and definitely really gutted the town there. But we also have had that kind of similar experience when we're looking at the economic impact that the flooding has done in Austin. And really, the good work that the city has done will help to mitigate that. And we just need the funds to be able to continue the process.
Well, this committee certainly would not want to stop the distribution of SPAN anywhere in the world. So we've got Representative Poppy renews her motion that House Bill 2764 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Is Representative Haas, did they find him yet? Okay, Representative Haas, then you might as well go up there. House file, Representative Haas moves that House file 348 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus funding. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm sorry for that motion. we are presenting tonight a request that has been presented before and probably would have passed last year had the bonding bill stayed intact. And as the National Hockey Center at St. Cloud State University, it is one of the four that was proposed in the late 1980s. Three of those types of facilities were built. One commonly known would be the Blaine soccer field, the multiple athletic complex at Blaine. The St. Cloud State Center has a two-sheet of ice, and it provides home ice for St. Cloud State, both men's and women's, St. John University, Apollo Tech, Sauk Rapids, and a renowned intramural program. I have two gifts tonight, Athletic Director Morris Kurtz and Vice President Steve Ludwig, and they will do the presenting.
Welcome. Thanks, gentlemen. Thank you, Representative Paz, Chair Rukavina, and members of the committee. My name is Steve Ludwig. I'm the Administrative Vice President of St. Cloud State University. Being distributed to you now is a brief description of the project, some plans, its location on campus adjacent to the existing National Hockey Center. And along with me is Dr. Morris Kurtz, our athletic director, and we believe between the two or three of us here, we can answer most of your questions. We're seeking funding for this addition to the National Hockey Center that was opened in 1989, as Representative Hawes pointed out, as part of an Amateur Sports Commission initiative at the time. The new addition will improve accessibility, add additional locker room space, training facilities, and of course improve spectator services. The facility now has an entrance lobby for a place that seats about 6,000 people, about equivalent to space enclosed by these four tables here in this room. It's very tight. And it really doesn't work very well for the large events that we're hosting increasingly. Our request is for $11 million in bonding appropriation. We propose to raise through the university an additional $2 million. And we've completed the pre-design for this project, so we're ready to move forward should there be funding approved. And we think it will enhance our athletic programs, but also our use for the community. It's used broadly for various hockey and other recreational programs, as well as figure skating, and it's an important economic engine in the region. We were told by the Amateur Sports Commission last year that the year previous it had generated $1.5 million in economic activity in the St. Cloud area as a result of activity outside of the university or intercollegiate athletics that's based on the amateur sports activity in the area. With that, I'll ask Dr. Kurtz to explain a couple of the characteristics.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Morris Kurtz, athletic director. It's my pleasure to be athletic director at St. Cloud State for the past 24 years. 20 years ago, when we received this funding, we promised the state to be good stewards of this project, and we have done exactly that. It's an outstanding facility that has provided an economic impact, not only for St. Cloud State University. The men's hockey team pays for the other 20 sports provided by this university and 570 male and female student-athletes. With a little bit of help, we can do a lot more. The most glaring example occurred just a few weeks ago when the under-18 international tournament, came down to three finalists, Providence, Rhode Island, Fargo, North Dakota, and St. Cloud State. Providence was removed early on in the process, came down to St. Cloud State and Fargo, and we lost out. And we're told very simply that we lost out because of some of these amenities that are simply missing. The building is showing its age. With the addition of some of the locker rooms, training rooms, weight training facilities, we can become even more of an economic impact for St. Cloud State and Central State and Central Minnesota. And hopefully next time the $5 million economic impact will not travel up Highway 94 to Fargo, but stay right here in Central Minnesota. So again, we thank the state of Minnesota for the funding 20 years ago. We ranked every year since the building opened in the top 10 attendance of Division I hockey in the entire country. We fielded very competitive men's and women's intercollegiate athletic programs. And again, the economic impact in these days cannot be overemphasized. With a little bit of help, we can do even more. And we stand ready to answer any questions.
Representative Haas, does the St. Cloud then will have an agreement, the St. Cloud State, to help with certain funds for this and play their games there? And then do they have a commitment to
pay so much for maintenance and ongoing expenses in it?
I didn't catch which schools you were referring to.
Oh, just St. Cloud State. Maybe Mr. either one of the gentlemen could answer the question.
Chair, Rick Covina, members of the committee. The university pays for the entire operating cost of facilities for its maintenance and improvements, utilities, and we would expect to continue that following this addition. And we are also proposing to raise $2 million for this capital investment.
The schools that I mentioned, the local high schools, the youth programs, they also pay rent to the facility for its use and maintenance and upkeep. So it really has been kept up. It's just that over the years, the things change, and our locker rooms have to be upgraded, and accessibility programs have to be brought in. It was one of the three jewels. I'm sorry that the fourth wasn't built at that time because it worked out. The three are very successful. But this jewel needs to have some shining and brightening, and that's we're at that stage, and that's why we're here repeating our request from last year.
And this, even though the appropriation is to the Minsky Board, I didn't notice it's on their priority list, right? It isn't anywhere.
It is not.
Okay. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered, because you clarified the first part, it's not on the Minsky list. Is it on the list of Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission's recommendations, and if so, where does it rank?
No, it's not on the Amateur Sports Commission request, because I think there's a little bit neither fish nor fowl. It was provided to the university to operate rather than being an entity operated by the Amateur Sports Commission, so it's ours now. But yet it's of significance to the region and to the state rather than as simply a university facility with all of its different uses. So we also haven't pursued it on the Minsky list either. So it's kind of betwixt and between, and so we're presenting it to you on its own merits.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Haas then renews his motion that House File 348 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion.
I do, and thank you for your time.
All those in favor, signify by saying
aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Haas, I did see Representative Haas come in the room. There he is. The representative, let's see, Slocum. Representative Slocum moves House File 2595 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. That's the Washburn Avenue improvements for Painesville. Representative Haas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I almost called you, thank you, Madam Chair, because I was just in Representative Wagenius of the committee.
That's fine.
I'm glad I didn't do that. But
I'll wear my skirt tomorrow. But right now
but thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, to the committee members. Due to the realization that time is a valuable commodity right now, I'd rather not talk too much and allow my testifier, Mayor Jeff Thompson from the City of Painesville, address the committee and answer any of your questions.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, I am Jeff Thompson, Mayor of the City of Painesville, and although I am not real at ease in this chair, I don't relish the position that you all are in listening to all of these requests. I do want to thank you for the opportunity to present this. I hope to be brief on what is a very important subject to the both the community of Painesville and the area surrounding it. The City of Painesville is both fortunate and unfortunate to be located on Highway 23. It has been designated an interregional corridor, and there are improvements underway between Wilmer and St. Cloud along those lines. As I said, we do realize the importance of Highway 23 to the economic vitality of not only the City of Painesville, but to the surrounding area and also the other parts of Minnesota and beyond. Highway 23 basically connects southwestern Minnesota to northeastern Minnesota, Sioux City, Sioux Falls, Duluth, Superior. By all rights, this almost should be an interstate connecting Interstate 29 with Interstate 35, but it is not. It is, for the most part, just a two-lane highway now. But it is being improved. The city has been working for 12 years with MnDOT and other agencies for the overall design and improvement of this highway. There is still no final decision, but there are improvements being made along the way. Construction for the bypass in Painesville is scheduled for 2010-2011, but there still is no final decision as to where that route is going to be. They've narrowed it down, but we're still not at the place where we can work on plans like industrial parks or those types of things. The proposed new design does create a new entrance into downtown Painesville and the existing industrial park. We were fortunate enough to have the Minnesota design team come into the community in 2007, about a year ago, and through that process we have uncovered and discovered that the new design will offer some barriers to economic development within the area. There are some safety concerns, and I believe you all have a map that has been passed out and also a copy of our application to the initial bonding. I apologize, we don't have nice colored ones. We did have a Senate and a House committee come to visit Painesville, and we blew our budget on that. We have to come up with about $1.9 million for this project.
Just
so
much coloring we can do.
We're cutting corners wherever we can. The new entrance will create some safety concerns. We expect from the figures that have been given that an additional 2,500 vehicles per day will be coming into downtown Painesville on what once was a very primitive township road. It was recently annexed into the city with intentions of some economic development happening there. There's a rail crossing or the CP rail. There's some angles that are of concern with the crossings. We are concerned about traffic flow. I mentioned the increase in expected traffic that will be coming right into the heart of downtown Painesville over a railroad track and making some weird curves and angles. There's a school bus garage about two blocks away from what will be the major intersection there, and also overall aesthetics. You want to put your best foot forward when it comes to economic development, I believe, and this will create some problems for us to handle individually as a city. This entire project is expected to be just about $1.9 million, and it's a project that we feel is not being initiated by us, although we have been willing partners in trying to plan for this and to work with MnDOT and federal agencies to speed up the improvements to Highway 23. We've worked with representatives at that time, Kennedy and Oberstar and Peterson and Senators Coleman and Dayton, to speed up the process. We got some federal funds designated for improvements along the way. The population of Painesville is approximately 2,400. We do not qualify for any MSA funds, although our service area is well over 5,000 with Painesville Township, which is a very urban township in the lake area. That's about our whole budget for 1 year, so we can't afford this project on our own. For economic development reasons, some of the major employers in our community are Painesville Area Healthcare System, which is 420 employees. And we have facilities in Painesville, Richmond, Cold Spring, Watkins, Eden Valley, Belgrade, Spicer. We are a regional center, although we're up only about 2,400 in population. Associated milk products, we have semis full of milk coming in and cheese and whey products going out on a daily basis. ANPI facility is located right on Washburn Avenue, right on the north edge of downtown, and that raises some concerns also. Lake Cronus, Rice Lake, Long Lake are all in the area. The Lake Cross Recreational Trail is slowly being approved to connect Lake Cronus with the Glacial Lake Trail and also some of the other trails around, such as the Ricori Trail that you'll be hearing about, and also the Lake Wobegon Trail. We recently constructed a new airport to assist in our economic development endeavors, and we're looking at a new industrial park, but at the point we are right now, we can't do much on more than we are doing. We don't want to be stagnant. We want to continue economic development to help the other communities in addition to Painesville in that area. And, Mr. Chair, any questions?
Members, any questions of Mayor Thompson? I guess, is there a, and I'm looking at the handout you gave us, and so you're matching us 50-50?
That is our intent, Mr. Chair, for a local match of half, if we can get the other half, and somewhere.
Mayor, has your LGA been cut since 2001 or whenever we did it?
It's gone up and down. It's like a yo-yo. For the most part, we've been holding fairly well with local government aid. There was one year we were cut quite badly, recovered the next year, but we are holding our own local government aid lately.
Any other questions? If not, then Representative Slocum renewed her motion that House Bill 2595 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Mayor, thank you very much. It looks like you could use a little help on this project.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Hoffman, might as well just stay right there. And we'll have Representative Slocum's on a run for you, so you might as well move the next one, 2596. Representative Hoss, you have a witness to that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have several witnesses from the Cold Spring area on this. And again, since you all know I'm not the most exciting person in this place, I will be quiet and allow the testifiers in the area to address the committee, and I'm happy to answer any questions afterwards.
Okay. Welcome to the...
Mr. Chair, he doesn't want to talk about that party the other night?
Just
that was between you and I, Representative Mahoney. No.
Identify yourself for the... That was you and I at a party the other night. Identify yourself for the tape witnesses and just go ahead with your testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sharon Jensen. I am a Cold Spring native and have been with Cold Spring Granite Company for 19 years. I am currently the Community Relations Director for the company. Cold Spring Granite was founded by my grandfather 109 years ago. 99 years ago, the company relocated its manufacturing facilities from Rockville, Minnesota, 6 miles west to Cold Spring, and a location on the Sauk River formerly occupied by a burned-out flour mill. While the city was looking to bring a new business into town, the company needed a new location, and thus a long-term working relationship began. The company's growth and success have undoubtedly been the result of the dedication and hard work consistently shown by our fine employees, most of whom are residents of the immediate area. The Cold Spring site of almost 30 acres, which is located just north of Highway 23 and on the west side of the Sauk River, which I believe many of you visited, has served us well for 99 years. Now we have the opportunity to work with the city to redefine the formerly industrial site to an area that will benefit the citizens of Cold Spring and the surrounding area and bring others to a beautiful location along the Sauk River and the Sand Lakes area. The company is collaborating with the city in the design and development and will make a donation of parkland to this project. One portion of the donation includes nearly 3 acres of land on the Sauk River adjacent to the existing Frogtown Park. I don't believe you saw that city park that is located just north, or you may have driven by it. It's located just north of this 30 acres of property. The other parcel of land is located upstream from the dam in the heart of the development. The River Plaza Park will provide exceptional access to the river and a great view of the state park across the river. Included in the project is the creation of features at River Park Plaza and the riverbank immediately below the dam. An important element of the redevelopment is the creation of a new walking trail along the river. The vision calls for the trail to begin at Frogtown Park and form a connection to Lyons Park just south of Highway 23. Included in the cost of the project is providing the city with an easement along the river from Frogtown Park to the River Plaza Park. The project includes $250,000 for the construction of the boardwalk from Main Street to River Plaza Park. With enhanced docking at Lyons Park, the riverfront promenade, and the development of a canoe portage and pedestrian and bike trail, the Chain of Lakes area will hold many opportunities for the citizens of the Ricori area and the many visitors we all anticipate in the years to come. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Councilman Kaufman from Cold Spring City Council.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Mike Kaufman. I'm a resident of Cold Spring, and I've been on one or the other city operations for 27 years, either planning commission, city council, or mayor. Cold Spring is part of a larger community that encompasses the Ricori School District. It's made up of Rockville, Richmond, Cold Spring, and the adjacent townships. These cities and townships have been meeting together and have cooperated for a long period of time. We
share police services with the township and with Richmond, and we have a joint waste treatment plant for the city of Rockville and Cold Spring. We also try to plan, we do a lot of joint purchasing. We look at major expenditures for equipment so that we can back each other up in case we have some problems. So we've worked together well for a long period of time now. We are currently working on the Ricori Trail, which you may or may not have heard of, which is going to go along, will be a connection with the major trails of the state. I've worked closely with the Granite Company for my 27 years with the city, and they have presented us, the city, with a wonderful opportunity to redevelop 30 acres in the downtown, a redevelopment project. I think this is probably the largest redevelopment, or we're told it's the largest redevelopment project outside of the Twin Cities. The city has worked with the company. There's already some TIF financing in place. We will be meeting Thursday to come up with more financing based on some recommendations from our Economic Development Authority. But what we're coming to you for is assistance for parts of this project that really go beyond what we can afford for the citizens of Cold Spring. These are types of amenities that will be used by people in the area, whether they live in the township or any of the three cities. It's very rare that you have an opportunity to open up in a downtown area a whole riverfront. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Naperville, Illinois, which has done a very good job of that. Many of you have been to San Antonio to see what you can do when you really plan something well. And this is one of those, maybe 100-year opportunities that you have in which you can really develop and make a difference in the community. Our area, the chain of lakes, there's a lot of tourism, there's a lot of people coming in to the city. So what we're looking to you for is to help us with this for those types of amenities that will benefit all the people in the region, not just the people in Cold Spring. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. You promised us you weren't going to talk. Now you want to talk. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to just say a few things because this project is, I think, extremely exciting, and there's a few things I want to point out. Where we want to direct the resources in which we're in front of the committee looking for is on the truly regional areas of this redevelopment. There is a park along the river. The Ricori Trail is going to be going right through the middle of this development, and this is really going to be a trailhead. For any of you who want to know what Ricori stands for, the RO stands for Rockville, the CO stands for Cold Spring, and the RI stands for Richmond. It's those three cities. But most importantly, one that's near and dear to my heart is the redevelopment of the access to the chain of lakes. The chain of lakes is a large amount of lakes, all connected and connecting the communities, but also the same place where my wife and I had our first date. And we're not Cold Springian, if you want to say that. So it is truly regional as it attracted us there. But this is an exciting project. The gravity and the largesse of this is hard to really contemplate. This is a heavy industrial area in which the buildings have already been demolished just last week. And this is a great opportunity for the private entity of Cold Spring Granite, the city, and also the state to partner in what can really be a great highlight of central Minnesota.
Councilman, is there a dollar-for-dollar match on this, or has there already been in-kind matches? Or
what we're requesting, the project is approximately $4 million, and we're asking for half of that.
Okay.
And the city and the company together are going to be putting over $10 million into it. Yeah, I think over $10 million by the time we're done with the project.
Ms. Jensen, I always love going through Cold Springs because it reminds me of the range. And I have to tell you that I know you're mining some granite up on the range, and I have Masaba Black countertops, the Masaba Black granite, and my dad's tombstone is your greenstone. So I made sure I bought products from up on the range, you know, because I always buy American, you know that. So this time I bought Ranger. So your Masaba Black, for those of you that would like to have a granite countertop, the Masaba Black is absolutely fantastic. So, any other questions? Anybody want to see my countertop?
Does Black Carolina have
the same? To see some of the other American-made products you have.
Well, I have some on tonight, matter of fact.
Okay, other questions? If not, Representative Slocum renews her motion. Then House File 2596 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Bryan. House File 2839. Representative Bryanert moves that House File 2839 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bonding bill under this committee. Go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. This is not quite the last of the Civic Center requests that you'll be hearing tonight, but it is the first time that the City of Mankato has come to request bonding dollars. Our Civic Center is 13 years old, and this is a phased bonding request. Tonight, we're just asking for the original $1.2 million for the pre-design and design of two additions to our Civic Center. One is a performing arts theater, and the other is the Southern Minnesota Women's Hockey Exposition Center. The amount will be matched by local dollars, $1.2 million. This proposal grows out of a long-range regional planning process called Envision 2020, as well as the Downtown Renaissance Plan, and the long-term partnership with Minnesota State University Mankato. And I have with me tonight Mankato City Manager Pat Hentges, and I'll let him take over and give you an overview of the proposal.
Welcome, Mr. Hentges. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The project, just by way of background, Mankato, about 13 years ago, constructed an arena for Minnesota State hockey. We funded that totally with local option sales tax. The university utilizes that arena. In 1997, women's hockey was essentially gender equity, required all the universities undertaking men's hockey to undertake women's hockey. We could not fully accommodate the women's program in the arena at that time, and actually went ahead and constructed an addition to our local arena for the women's program. If you look in the brochure, you can see the comparison between the men's and the women's facility. The men's, obviously, is a fairly modern arena. It's actually the smallest of the WCHA arenas, with the exception of Michigan Tech, but it accommodates our program quite well. Women's program, unfortunately, is in a local arena, seats about 800 persons. It's essentially a typical community ice arena. We essentially, in the women's program, the community has outgrown that. We are looking at constructing an annex for the men's and women's program to practice in, the women's to have their game competitions in. That would be an annex to the main facility, and we are asking for the planning dollars for that. In addition to that, we are working on another partnership with the university and the region to construct a small performing arts auditorium to our adjacent Civic Center, and would serve for small events and large university lectures and events. And then, of course, we have support from some local organizations like the Regional Symphony Orchestra and others that would utilize that along with our convention activity. Now, the women's program also, as I mentioned, would play their games there, but we would also use that for overflow expo space for the Civic Center. Unfortunately, we are tied eventually to sales tax for our local match to the arena. We are pursuing that bill and have successfully had referendum supporting that, and we will again look for the voters when that comes forward. But we do have sufficient funding available to match the state dollars in this phase of the project, and that money is available for expenditure on the planning portion of this project. Again, I would just emphasize that this has been a great partnership with really the state of Minnesota and Minnesota State University. We essentially have operated that facility probably as efficiently as anyone could in the country in terms of the events that we schedule in there, along with WCHA hockey events, and hopefully in the future the women's program and other university events should this addition and annex become available in the future.
Steve, questions. I'm just, is it scheduling that you can't, the women's hockey can't play in the arena?
Yeah, essentially it's scheduling. Right now the university takes up about 18 of those prime weekend dates during the winter months. And very frankly, we have lights on for community concerts and arena concerts, floor shows, convention space. The majority of the time when the university is not in there. This really has allowed our facility as a small market facility to be one of the more efficient facilities in the country. But the other part of this is that obviously we play an Olympic sheet of ice. Some of the women's programs, or a significant amount of women's programs, play on a smaller sheet of ice as they do in our community and the local community. Ice sheet that they play on.
The other question? If not, then Representative Reiner renews her motion that House File 2839 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. If there's no further questions, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Representative Liebley, House File 2835. Representative Hogg moves that House File 2835 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, everybody. Well, one more Civic Center project, but we happen to think that this is a very special one. And, of course, we wouldn't be here if we didn't. But we think that this is a very good project, not just for the Rochester area, but for the entire state. The total cost of this project is $75 million, and the request from the state is for half of that amount. This, we think, is really a unique project because of how Rochester is situated. This would be an expansion of the Mayo Civic Center, which many of you I know have been in. And this expansion will create jobs, will stimulate the economy, of course, but most importantly, this will bring in new revenue from out-of-state visitors to the state. And I know that a lot of you are aware of a lot of investments that have been made in the Rochester area. There's a lot going on there. There's a very important synergy of the biosciences, things that are going on at Mayo, in partnership with the University of Minnesota, and so on. This expanding the Civic Center would allow us to make full use of those resources by bringing in people for conferences from other places in the nation and international visitors as well. So we expect that this project will create at least 325 construction jobs, but also at least 750 new permanent jobs in various sectors of the economy. And so with me tonight, I have Brad Jones, who is the Executive Director of the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau, and he's the expert on the project. So I'm going to let him explain a little bit more.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stone.
Thank you. Brad Jones, Executive Director of Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau. Chairman Rukavina and members, thank you for your time. As you've heard, because of unique community assets in Rochester, Mayo Clinic, IBM, Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology, and really the medical genomics projects that are happening in the brand new University of Minnesota Rochester downtown, all of those are directly connected to the current Mayo Civic Center facility and the proposed expansion. Basically, we're a city that's uniquely positioned to attract visitors both nationally and internationally to our city, and currently do. This is a rapidly growing subset of the convention marketplace. When you look at the segments of our industry that are growing, the two biggest are medical and technology conventions. So I should say that this project is uniquely targeted toward this audience, and it's a growing segment of our marketplace. I say that because there aren't many currently that are growing in the convention marketplace. Basically, our current facility is a civic center. It's a multi-purpose facility with some sports venues. What we're proposing is a convention center. And this convention center is needed because these types of conventions that are looking at Rochester and the state of Minnesota need this type of facility. We're competing against ballrooms in Chicago, ballrooms in Boston, and facilities on the West Coast. Many of these meetings and conventions and events have come to look at our facility. We have the hotel rooms, 5,500 in our city. We have the assets that they're looking for, Mayo Clinic and the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology. The last part of that puzzle really is a convention center to host their event. The expansion itself will add 180,000 square feet of new construction to the current Mayo Civic Center facility. The economic activity generated by the construction alone will generate over $850,000 in sales tax back to the state and approximately $1.1 million in income tax revenue. The current economic impact of our facility is $98 million annually. The expansion will increase the economic impact by an estimated $21 million annually in direct spending and $42 million in overall economic impact annually, for a total economic impact of $140 million. The economic activity generated by the expansion will increase the state tax revenue by about $2.8 million annually, at least a third of which, third of the business, $1 and $3 come from out-of-state visitors. So that's what makes this project very unique in scope. Again, that out-of-state and international visitor. One of the most exciting aspects of this project is its potential really to add to what we already have in infrastructure. Everything that I mentioned that's directly connected to this facility will be accessible by these visitors, and we'll be able to take advantage of that. The last part of this that's exciting is we think that this will give Minnesota and Rochester the opportunity to showcase what we have to the biosciences and medical personnel that are out there. I think really we hope that these folks will come and see what we have, possibly relocate a business here, and once they see the assets that we have in Rochester, they'll start asking questions and hopefully become part of really what is exploding in southeast Minnesota.
Representative Liebling, you have a sales tax, a special sales tax for education purposes too, don't you?
Yes, we do. We have one in place.
Has this one been approved then to match?
No, what we're planning to do for the local match is to increase, try to get a 1% food and beverage tax, which we don't have now, and then increase our lodging tax from 4% to 5%. So not a sales tax per se, but food and beverage and then lodging taxes. And I don't have the chart with me, but Rochester's positioned fairly low with respect to what other areas have for those taxes. So
You don't have, the tax hasn't been approved then?
Yes. It has not been approved. Not the tax that would be the local match for this project.
So it's just on food and beverage and on lodging.
And on lodging, right.
Many people have tried to increase that lodging tax, and a few are on this table. They haven't been too successful. So, well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Welcy, Representative Welcy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jones pointed out a number of good economic statistics to really drive this project, and I have to say that they've made the case well to the local delegation. We've all been through many meetings, and one thing that's really startling is when you look at the numbers of conventions that we have to turn away because we don't have the space to accommodate them, and we're really looking at drawing new dollars into the state. And so if we really want to look at how can we bring in dollars from around the country into the state of Minnesota and really create an economic gain for our state, this is a really wise project for our state to invest in, and we're willing to put up half those dollars from our local community.
Right.
If I could add to that, in 2006, as you can see, we turned away 78 events, which our sales team brought to town, and because of inadequate facilities, these folks picked a different destination outside of the state of Minnesota. That represents nearly $20 million in expenditures that could have come to the state of Minnesota and Rochester. So we're seeing this problem in 2007 and 2008 as well in and growing frustration that we're bringing folks in. They want to come, but we don't have the facility to bring them.
Representative Hodge, do you have a question?
Yeah, for you. On the food, beverage, and hotel taxes, are those a similar route to the sales tax, local sales tax?
Are those, excuse me?
Do they have to get the same approval that the local sales tax do, or is that up to the jurisdiction?
No, they have to get a special bill passed here at the legislature, and if Representative Murphy were still here, she could tell you that a few years ago, and it wasn't that long ago for anybody that's on tax committee with me, maybe 3 years ago, I think, that Proctor tried to use their lodging tax and increase it a little bit, or maybe just directed to a different, I think it was for, I can't remember if it was for maintaining some type of infrastructure, but she didn't get it through. So the lodging tax has been difficult. The other food and beverage one, I think, you know, that probably would be a little more easier to pass, but that's up to the local legislators to try to sell here at the legislature.
Yes. Thanks,
yes. Sir. Are you getting ideas, Representative
Hodge? No, obviously, it would make a certain amount of sense to increase the lodging tax because you'd be bringing in visitors who would then be paying for the center. So that does make a certain amount of sense. But I just wanted to mention another factor that maybe...
A small little medical tax would be appropriate.
We're already paying a lot of that, Mr. Chair, for a lot of folks around the state. But I also did want to just mention in terms of energy conservation, which I know is a big concern of a lot of us and a growing concern, and this facility, in fact, would be really unique in that it would be heated, and it is heated now with steam from our waste-to-energy facility. So this means that we are using garbage to provide heat and cooling, I think, too, for the facility. And this would be would meet the standards, we hope, for LEED certification as well, if I'm saying that correctly, Mr. Jones. So, you know, this would be part of the intention in constructing the facility as well. And then I also just did want to mention that there is a lot of local buy-in for this project. You know, everybody from Southeast Minnesota Building and Trades Council to Mayo Clinic and the Chamber of Commerce. So, I mean, it is a project that has a lot of local buy-in from different diverse groups.
Okay. I think Representative Hodge, but I'll have Representative Martin finally move this the possible inclusion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Bruce, House Bill 2891. And this is really an interesting project here. I've had this project presented to me, so welcome to the committee. Representative Bruce moves that House Bill 2891 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus workforce development education bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not a civic center. This is a new, exciting, unique opportunity that we have. And if you take out your packet, it's the Wildlife Art Museum. And it would be a partnership between Steele County and the University of Minnesota. I'm sorry, University of St. Thomas. Oh, bad. Sorry. St. Thomas. In Ortona, we have what's called the Greeny Conference Center, and St. Thomas delivers a master's program there and has for many years, and it's very well attended. The Minnesota artists have won nearly one-third of all the annual federal duck stamp competitions since the program's inception in the 30s, and this bonding proposal would help create a permanent institution to exhibit, interpret, and celebrate this art. I have with me Doug Hennis, who's the Vice President for University Relations at the University of St. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. St. Thomas became aware last year that several Minnesota's best-known wildlife artists got their start in Owatonna as commercial artists at Jostens, which produces rings and yearbooks. Jostens was run for several decades by Daniel C. Ganey, who left his estate to St. Thomas after his death in 1979. And St. Thomas then built the conference center, which it runs on the 180-acre property on the south side of town.
We first explored the possibility of a Gainey Center tribute to wildlife artists from Owatonna and then broadened the vision to include all wildlife artists from Minnesota. And we believe there are about 30 such active wildlife artists today. No such wildlife art museum exists today in Minnesota. The museum would be open to the public and would include permanent and temporary displays of wildlife art, as well as lectures and workshops that artists would lead for school-aged children. We would construct the museum as an addition to the Gainey Conference Center. St. Thomas would enter into a ground lease with the museum parcel to Steele County, which then would enter into an operating lease with St. Thomas to operate the museum. The museum construction would cost about $2.5 million. Steele County seeks half of those funds, or $1.25 million, from the bonding bill, and St. Thomas would raise the other half, as well as cover operating costs to the museum. We see this as a really exciting public-private partnership. We've done a lot of things with the county and with the city in the 25-plus years that we've been down in Owatonna, and hopefully can move forward with this particular project.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
And Madam Chair, I would just add that, I mean, this would be a home for wildlife art from around the state, because we would have the state availability and a public resource for all Minnesotans. So we appreciate the opportunity to present this project.
Thank you. Representative Ruth then renews her motion to pass along House File 2891 to the omnibus bonding bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 All right. Thank you, Ruth. I know. There's nothing here. Representative Faust. Representative Portman will move House File
2644. I just have a question for Representative Faust first.
All right.
Representative Faust, did you bring any snacks for the committee tonight?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
I'll move his file anyway.
Thank you, Representative Faust.
You need to give me a little bit of warning on that, and I'll bring you something worthwhile.
You can go ahead with your presentation, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have with me today the City Administrator for the City of Mora, Joel Dine. And the project that we're looking at today is part of the HRA Authority in Mora. We certainly have 109 subsidized senior apartments, and they are in the process of adding a building actually on a new site. I believe it's a 20 or 24 unit building. And part of that new complex, they want to add a senior center. We currently don't have a senior center in Mora or any of the surrounding area, and it's something that is badly needed in the area. In the information that you've got, there's a list of all the activities that they will be having in the senior center, and I'm not going to waste your time and read that when you can read it perfectly well yourself. I know it's getting late, and I'm assuming that I'll get brownie points for skipping over that. There also is a map of the area, and you can see by the map some of the other things that they're going to add into this location. On the far right on the map, the 202 building, that's the building that they're currently working on. The senior center will go just on the other side of the cul-de-sac. They're also looking at some assisted living centers and a bunch of townhomes, as well as hopefully two or three other apartment type complexes. This is going to be a big development that they're going to be working on for many years, and part of the reason for that is because we have a waiting list typically for the HRA subsidized housing unit. Mora has a lot of people that are retiring from the cities and moving into that community, and so we have a high senior population, at least relatively so. So this is a great project for the community. We currently have $300,000. They're hoping to raise $1 million total. This $300,000 does not include the land that the building will sit on, so it's actually somewhat higher than that. But they're hoping to get another $700,000 so they can spend about $1 million on the building itself. And I guess that's as fast as I can put it, I guess. Do you have anything to add?
If you'll just still want to state your name for the record,
sure.
Please.
My name's Joel Vine. I'm the city administrator for Mora. Just like to add that the HRA has been working on
this project along with additional housing projects for about 5 years. And the money that they did receive, or the $300,000, was from a direct appropriation from Congress. So they are actually kind of under the gun, since that money has to be spent within a specific period of time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Portman.
I just have a comment, and then I'll renew my motion.
Thank you.
In case you get tempted to cut the lap pool for budget reasons, I'd encourage you to strongly work to keep that lap pool in there. I think that's an important thing to have in a senior center. I know in the City of Brooklyn Center, there's a community pool that's very highly utilized by the senior community, and in my opinion, there's not enough pools for senior citizens to use and stay in fit. So.
Thank you very much.
Renew the motion that will be recommended to pass and we refer to capital investment. How possible inclusion in the bonding bill.
Thank you, Representative Portman, and thank you, Representative Paul.
And thank you. Thank you.
Next up, we have Representative Greiling. No. Representative Greiling, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you want to move the bill.
Oh, yes, thank you. Representative Reinert will move House File 2576 for possible inclusion in the bonding bill. Thank you, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Reinert. And thank you to the long-suffering committee members. And if only I'd been thinking I would have brought a snack, because that would surely get this project in. We are trying to be short. We did not bring the young skaters that sold this bill last year, because we are know that you're short of time. But we did bring the city manager of Roseville, who's sitting over there in the blue shirt, excuse me, Bill Melanin, and he used to work for Representative Haas over here from...
And a very good employee.
And a very good employee. And then to my left, I have Lonnie Brown, who is our Roseville Parks and Rec Director, and he'll give the first testimony, I think, and then also Dan Rowe, who is on the Roseville City Council. And this truly is not only a regional facility, but a state facility, and even a national and international facility. So we hope you'll listen carefully, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak to you tonight about the Guidance John Road Minnesota Oval. As many mentioned, my name is Lonnie Brocky. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Roseville, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of the statewide users and the partners of the Minnesota Oval located in the City of Roseville, Minnesota. This request specifically is to make needed improvements in terms of safety and efficiency and capital improvements for the Guidance John Road Minnesota Oval. The Minnesota Oval is a facility that serves the entire state of Minnesota and beyond. In 2006, the Minnesota Oval requested $960,000 for these improvements and for various projects, and we received $500,000, which we're extremely grateful for, by the way. We did finish the project, which was an entryway that made it much more of a functional facility, as well as added some restrooms. Specifically, the request before you is the remaining projects that were included in the 2006 request. The request is for the projects, including an inflationary and a cost indexing project. The Minnesota Oval hosts international, national, and statewide events, including simply recreational skating, and is one of only five facilities in the nation. It is a national training center for a sport called bandy. It is home to the USA bandy team. It is home to the Greater Minnesota Speed Skating Association, which recently hosted the National Speed Skating Championship in January. It is truly a unique facility and one of a kind, and is considered the largest continuous sheet of ice in the world today. The Minnesota Oval has more than a $2.5 million annual economic impact on events alone, and the Minnesota Oval alone
gets tremendous views and attracts more than 125,000 visitors each year, with the entire skating center drawing more than 250,000 visitors from throughout Minnesota and beyond. Thank you again, and we urge your support to continue to build this partnership between the state of Minnesota, the city of Roseville, the facility users, nonprofits, the private sector, and support funding for this very important Minnesota facility for Minnesota and beyond. Thank you.
Any representative?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grayling, one of your guests. Aren't there some speed skating Olympians who trained at this facility?
There are several, and each event, actually we just had three in this national championship that went on to the World Cup. But we've had Amy Sanis and Annie Driscoll, Amy Peterson, Bonnie Blair has skated at this facility. So it's definitely been beyond.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, I would just add that there's other skaters that have trained there as well, and one of them is Representative Sheldon Johnson and his wife, and he tells me that it promotes marital harmony to have this facility.
I'll move to table the bill. Are there any other questions? Representative
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I'm sorry I had to step out for just a moment, but Representative Grayling, did you inform the committee where the name John Rose comes from? Because if you don't, I will give it a little history, but I'm more than sure that you can.
I'm the only person at this table that served with Representative John Rose.
And that doesn't mean you're the only guy who knew him.
No, that's true. But I'm the only one here that...
And he was a really nice guy from what I
He was a
remember.
Really nice guy. And he used to do his Karnak at the end of sessions all the time. He would put on his robe and his hat, you know, like Johnny Carson used to do, and he would, you know, say, you know, what can I think of one for Mahoney? Let's see.
While you're thinking, Mr. Chair, if I might, Representative Grayling, Representative Rose passed away very suddenly, but had been a huge supporter of the Parks Department in Roseville, and it was a very fitting honor. Although he was from the other side of the aisle, he was mentioned to me as a man that we should all, as representatives, try to emulate, because he was genuinely concerned about Minnesota and the kids of Minnesota and the Parks Departments of State.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney. I used to vote for Representative Rose back when I was a Republican.
Are you taking medication for that? Okay. Representative Reiner, renews her motion. I won't lecture the committee about where the idea of the Amateur Sports Commission came from and where it was supposed to be located. I won't even do that. So tonight, Representative Reiner renews her motion and House File 2576 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Any other questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Thank you.
Representative Rude. Representative Wealthy moves that House File 2842 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus workforce and higher education bonding proposal. Representative Rude, moje rođaki, dobro došli.
Veselo vas vidim. How's that?
Members, did you know that Representative Rude and I come from the same little village in Croatia, and we ended up in the same legislature together? Can you believe that? There's like 20 houses. I think she's a relative of mine somewhere back.
Sure, I must be. Thank you.
She acts like me on occasion, too. Welcome.
I
could say it again. Are you taking medication for it?
So you're trying to help a real action.
I will keep my comments very brief. Tonight I have the city manager from the city of Eden Prairie, Mr. Stat Neal, and he is going to tell you about this very worthy project.
Welcome, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Scott Neal. I'm the city manager in Eden Prairie, and we're here tonight to talk about a project that we call the Camp Edenwood Project. Camp Edenwood has an interesting history, and I'll be very brief with that history this evening. But it started life as the part of the Glen Lake Sanatorium and was part of the movement in the late 19th century, early 20th century to provide a location for kids and adults at that time with tuberculosis to have a camp experience. So taking kids out of the city and taking them out to the countryside on the edge of Hennepin County, right at a spot that lies almost on the border of Minnetonka and Eden Prairie, to a 19-acre campsite where they could have a true kind of up-north experience, but not be too far from home. That camp was operated by Hennepin County until 1950. In the mid-50s, it had a brief period of dormancy. It was then taken over by ARC of Minnesota, and it was operated from 1957 to 1983 by ARC. It had another brief period of dormancy then and was transferred from Hennepin County to the city of Eden Prairie in the 90s. The city has leased this campsite because that was part of the agreement with Hennepin County when they transferred the property to the city, that it must be used for the camp experience, the recreational needs of disabled children and adults. So the city has contracted with an organization called Friendship Ventures for a number of years, since the early 90s. Friendship Ventures is a nonprofit, private organization, private charitable organization. They operate three camps in Minnesota: Camp Friendship in Annandale, Camp New Hope in McGregor, and Camp Edenwood in Eden Prairie. They serve 3,000 people, and these are disabled kids and young adults at their three camps last year, 3,000 people from 83 of 87 Minnesota counties. So this truly is a project that does have a statewide impact, and for many of your districts, you will have a family or two who have sent their kids to Camp Edenwood. And for many of these families, this is a break for them. This may be their one break of the year. They have a child that has, in many cases, very severe disabilities. They don't get a break like you and I do from our kids. But this one weekend or this one week, they can take their child to Camp Edenwood, and that child can have a true camp experience that every other kid gets to have in Minnesota. Most do. But they have the medical and educational and recreational specialists at the camp that provide that child with an experience that we think they ought to have. Friendship Ventures, 90% of their revenue goes to their programming. They raise funds. They're in fundraising mode all the time. 90% of their funds they raise goes to programming at the camp. 10% goes to their administrative overhead, and even just a smidge of that then goes to capital improvements at the camp. Most of their capital improvements over the years have been done with a pretty dedicated group of union retired carpenters who have made repairs throughout the years at many of their buildings. What we are proposing with this project is a pretty good infusion of state dollars into Camp Edenwood to raise the level of the camp to current standards, and also to double the number of beds and double the number of access that can be available to kids there. And that's really what we're looking for, is support from the state for that camp. We believe it does have the opportunity to create opportunities for kids all across the state that to have an experience there that is very valuable to them as they grow up in Minnesota. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Representative Black.
Just a comment. Mr. Neal is a constituent of mine, and I've worked with him on several projects, and also when he was our city administrator. I also worked with his wife, who ran a child care program and served some of the students in my program. And I'm very happy to see him here.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Root, I see you're contributing then, or Eden Prairie or someone, or the whomever is contributing 1.76 to the project, million?
And so the total cost is...
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. So it's about an $8 million project, and there's about a 6.8 is the total.
Does that come from the city, or is that from...
It's actually a combination of city funds and in-kind and charitable donations from Friendship Ventures. So we've had a good partnership there at the site to operate the camp. You know, for us, this is a city park. It is a camp operated by Friendship Ventures, but for the most part, our residents don't have much access to this camp because of the way that it's dedicated for Friendship Ventures.
Other questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just want to be clear in my own mind. So the camp, the land is actually owned by the city of Eden Prairie, and you're improving it for this particular camp and the children that it serves.
Chair? Yeah, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Representative, who did I have? Who's this? Representative Welty. Then renews his motion that House File 2842 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Any other questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Sam Rude, Mr. Neal.
Lepo follow.
Lepo.
Thank you,
Representative Morgan, House File 1227. Representative McFarland moves that House File 1227 be recommended to pass and be held open for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee. Representative Morgan, this is the first time you've been in front of our committee?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Gary, we're going to pick on you.
Okay, thanks. I look forward to it. To give even more ammunition for picking, I have to beg the Chair's indulgence on a couple of amendments. I believe we have... with Mr. Gelman, the A1 amendment.
Do we have any? Oh, yes. Okay, Representative McFarland then moves the A1 amendment.
The project has begun since the submission of the bill almost a year ago. This means that we no longer can use bonding proceeds and it needs to be a general fund appropriation, and this amendment accounts for that.
Okay. Any other questions on that motion? If not, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The other amendment?
The other amendment would be an oral amendment. It was intended to be a 50-50 local state match, and that means on line 10, it should be $10 million from non-state sources instead of 15, Mr. Chair, if I could request your assistance in making that oral amendment.
So what would you want that number to be then, Representative Morgan?
Line 10 would be at least $10 million from non-state sources.
Representative Bryant moves then to delete $15 million and insert $10 million on line 1.10. And we have to change it down below?
No, sir.
That'll be it. Okay. All those in favor then of the Bryant amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And then... we'll have to amend your motion, Representative McFarland, because this won't be held over. Do you want this bill to go on its own to the floor?
No, sir. I would like it to continue to go on to the Capital Investments Committee. I've spoken with the chair, and she'd like to see it next.
But you don't have any bonding.
That's what I said to her, and that's what she said to me. So I don't question the chair of Capital Investments.
You want.
Freshman following orders.
Okay, go ahead. Here we go.
Thank you very much for your time and for your stamina tonight. I'll be brief, and I'll turn it over to the Mayor of Burnsville. As I said before, the City of Burnsville has begun a project to build and operate a performing arts center in its Heart of the City Redevelopment and Revitalization project. This performing arts center will be a one-of-a-kind facility south of the river in the metropolitan area, and as such, we believe it has a significant regional and state impact. The Mayor of Burnsville, Elizabeth Couch, is here with me to talk about the plan and the vision for this Performing Arts Center. Mayor Couch.
Thank you, Representative Morgan and Chair Lena and members of the committee. With me tonight is our City Manager, Craig Ebling, and our Deputy City Manager and Chief Financial Officer, Tammy Omdahl. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you this evening about this wonderful project that is a regional amenity, we believe, to not only to the city of Burnsville, but to the metropolitan area, to those citizens south of the river. The project began over 12 years ago with reinvesting in our community. It's a 54-acre site that we needed to redevelop, but it was showing signs of blight, and it was quickly moving into a crime-infested area. And over 1,000 people from our community came together, and in their wisdom, we created a vision for a urban setting in the suburbs. And what we have now is a 54-acre site that at one time was yielding $166,000 in taxes a year. At this point now is $1.5 million that we're yielding in property tax, and at its completion, about $3 million. So the investment from the city was one that was very small, but with private investment, here we are re-energizing and stimulating the economic vitality of our city. Why is this an economic development asset for the region? We believe that Burnsville sits right in a very strategic area south of the river where the interstate divides to Minneapolis and St. Paul. Our community is, when we go to bed, 62,000 people, 222, I must count every citizen and voter. But during the day, we blossom to 150,000 people who come to work in our city and to shop and to recreate. And one of the things that the heart of the city has already realized is that over $1 million of private donations to different art pieces and to this particular investment. There are 10 redevelopment projects in the city since 2001, 300 total new housing units, and some of those are affordable units. One of the things that during our research and analysis, we discovered that if we're going to really stimulate the economic vitality of our city and really move into the 21st century workforce, what we needed to really pay attention to are those amenities that really enhances the quality of life for people. And we also discovered that we needed to bring in the 26 to 36-year-old workers to our community. And we believe to this point, with the 300 new housing units that is economically diversified so that we have units that are affordable for young people and also for senior citizens and empty nesters, the heart of the city is bringing in young workers and also have an intergenerational environment. The Performing Arts Center is 64,000 square feet with 1,000 seat main theater, 150 seat black box. We intend for this theater to be lights on during the day. It is scheduled to have rehearsal space, art space, meeting space, event spaces, so that it will have the kind of convention amenities that everyone thinks we need here in our metropolitan area. What we also believe in the research that we have done is that the citizens south of the river, about 600,000 of them, are really looking for this kind of amenity south of the river. The river becomes a psychological boundary. And so they would like to enjoy the cultural amenities, but the river becomes a psychological boundary. And there's over 600,000 people that are our shared constituents that would appreciate this kind of amenity. And as I've said before, Burnsville is a regional center. It provides regional services with local infrastructure. And it has a lot of generous citizens who have donated close to $1 million in private donations and have invested over $115 million and $40 million more in the works in this area. Why are we asking for your partnership and support for an amenity south of the river? We believe it's a fair and equitable issue. We ask for you to support a facility that, like no other, and it's no different than the support that the state has given to the metropolitan area and to other areas in greater Minnesota. So we hope that you would recognize those of us south of the river, and our request is a small portion, and it's $10 million and half the cost of the construction of the Performing Arts Center. And we would like to continue the partnerships that we have, not only with the state, but with all of our other neighbors south of the river. So in closing, what we offer is a quality of life amenity for our citizens, over 600,000 of them south of the river. And the Performing Arts Center is that kind of amenity that will also attract young workers to our city and to our region, that are workers who will have the skill set and equipped for the 21st century workforce. I thank you for your attention and for your consideration. I and our staff will stand for your questions, and we appreciate your listening to us this evening.
Thank you, Mayor. Questions? Okay, if not, then, and we've got orders from the bonding chair that she wants us to come in with our package. So with that, then, let's see. McFarland renews her motion. Representative Mahoney.
If I might, what happens if the $10 million isn't found? We're in a budget deficit. I mean, having read your packet, it looks like there was a intent to go through the Met Council, and that didn't happen. Was this in the bonding bill last year?
Mayor?
Representative Mahoney, Mr. Chair, we did have it. It did not go through the bonding bill last year, but we did bring a bill forward, and Representative Morgan can speak to that.
Yeah, it was not part of the bonding bill that was vetoed last year. It was not considered for that bill last year, and then by the time we got around to considering it this year, obviously the city had already begun with the project. Clearly the city's made a commitment to building this Performing Arts Center, and what they are doing is asking for the state's help. As much help as can be given, and the typical 50% is what we're asking right now.
Thank you.
Okay. And Representative McFarland renews her motion that House File 1227 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Other questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Inclusion. Other questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Powell. We're getting to the... We always save the best for last.
Thank you.
And we're getting close, so you're obviously the second.
Well, I'll be there. I know many of you guys have not had dinner, but it's okay. I haven't had lunch yet, so...
Representative Mahoney moves that House File 1742 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think I'll make it pretty short. I'll just introduce the executive director, and she'll go down a couple brief lines, and then we'll get out of here. This is the director of the APCC, Naomi Chu.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
A little warmer than the last time I saw you, at least in this building.
Yes, absolutely. 41 below is a little too cold.
Yeah, but you're counting wind chill. We don't count that way.
Okay, we're 17 below on our site, and you go another 10 degrees when you walk inside that cement building.
Yes, it was. It was cold.
But I will give a 30-second testimony. You know, this is the Asian Pacific Cultural Center. We are retrofitting and redeveloping a portion of the former Ham Brewery. This is an $18 million project. I want to thank the committee for the $400,000 we received in planning funds in 2006. And, you know, basically what I will say about the Asian Pacific Cultural Center is this is a great resource. For corporations, educational institutions, families with adopted children, individuals, and just really everyone within the state. I can give a much longer testimony in terms of where we think our economic development aspect is, but I'll end the testimony and just take questions.
Members, they have a great vision and certainly a wonderful reuse of what's a very historic part of St. Paul, and the Dancing Bear I remember well. I think I saw him a couple occasions, but anyway. So, are there any questions from the committee and all? Because it is a very worthwhile project.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Come on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Naomi and Representative Tao, this is an absolutely wonderful particular project, and when Representative Rukavina said it's a historic part of the city, what I'd like people to understand is this is actually it butts up to Sweet Hollow, which is where, other than that drunken Frenchman that laid out the streets of St. Paul.
But he had an Irish surveyor.
I thought he's a Serb. This is where people lived in the city of St. Paul at the beginning, and as the as people moved up the hill, as we called it, and out of Sweet Hollow, the next wave of immigrants, this is where St. Paul's immigrants came. And as Minnesota has seen over the last 25 years, we've had a great influx of Asian immigrants, not just among, as our colleague, Representative Tao, but we've had Afghans, we've had Indians, we've had people from Guam, Vietnam, all across the nation, all across the world, and they really have no place in the state, in the city, to congregate and call their own. We have the Creation Hall. Well, how do you say it down there?
Croatian.
Yeah, I knew it was that, something like that, down in South St. Paul. And we have the curling clubs up on the range. They're ethnic, I know. But this is really a blending of that whole part of the world, and we have them all represented in St. Paul and in the metro area. So this will be a huge part. And this is just to the west of the 3M complex that has been abandoned by 3M and will be a huge anchor to a burgeoning ethnic community, both on Arcade and on Payne. So it is a very important part to the city of St. Paul.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just like to add one thing, too. You know, when you look at this map on the back, each one of these red dots represents 5 to 10 different Asian ethnicities. You know, that's why we say we're the first in the nation to encompass over 40 different communities. But what I would really like to add is, to Representative Mahoney's statement, is that this is not just a place for the many diverse Asian communities that are now making up the face of Minnesota. We have 200,000 in population here. But it is really a place for us to share our cultures, to celebrate, to promote, but to share, so that really we really become a resource and a link in Minnesota's backyard locally. For people to learn about the Asian cultures who want to start working in the global economy and expanding their market.
Mr. Chair, if you guys rank this high on your preference list, instead of having the dancing bear, I know that's gone, we'll have the dancing dragon. So.
Okay. If Representative Mahoney renews his motion, then House Bill 1742. He recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And now, the one we've been looking for, House File 2483, Representative Mahoney moves House File 2483 be recommended to pass and held open for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education and Workforce Development Bonding Bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr.
Both
Chair.
Of you.
Thank you very much. What this bill does is request funding to the City of St. Paul to purchase and make renovations to a building on St. Paul's east side, which is the former Eastern Heights Bank behind the Sunray Shopping Center, to provide office and program space for St. Paul Youth Services. And with me is the Executive Director of St. Paul Youth Services, Nancy Letourneau. She's just going to spend a few moments explaining
welcome,
the project.
Mr. Nice thank to see you again, too.
Good to see you. Thank you, Chairman Gavina, and for the committee. St. Paul Youth Services has been partnering with the City of St. Paul, mostly law enforcement, St. Paul Schools, and Ramsey County for over 35 years. Our job is to focus on kids who are demonstrating by their behavior that they're heading down a dangerous path. And I think one way I could probably make that case to you quickly tonight, because I know everybody's had a long day, is, for example, if we work with Ramsey County to identify kids who are under 10 who already have delinquency histories with law enforcement. These kids, research tells us, will cost the state $2 million apiece in criminal justice costs. 70 kids that we're working with right now, we're looking at $140 million total with this small group of kids. What our research has demonstrated as we work with these kids and families is that 80% of them we can turn around and save those costs to the state. So that's the kind of work that we do. We also work with kids who are suspended chronically from middle schools, kids who are arrested at young ages, kids who are in crisis, might be running away from home. Over the course of a year, we'll work with about 1,000 kids. And so that's the role that St. Paul Youth Services plays in this community and the state.
Mr. Chair, if I could make a make an oral amendment briefly, and that's changing the number 750,000 to 500,000.
Representative Mahoney moves that. And both lines 1.7 and 1.1.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
That 750,000 be deleted and replaced with $500,000. All those, any questions on that amendment? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
That's a tribute, Mr. Chair, to the hard work and the capital campaign of St. Paul Youth Services to be able to bring the number down to one that was more workable.
To our capital campaign chair, Bob Long, who joined us here tonight, too.
Hello, Mr. Long. Nice to see you. So this building already exists, and you're renovating it and expanding, too? Or
That's correct.
Okay. And then will you be able to have more clients?
Absolutely, yes. We're always looking at ways. I mean, the number of things that we can do in and with the building will expand as well.
You just serve clients in the Ramsey County area? Or?
Correct.
Okay, other questions? Then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 2483, as amended, be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, thank you very much for being patient. I think we got out of here a lot sooner than we expected. So tomorrow we meet. Mr. Coleman's going to be here with the PFA, WIFT, and DEED proposal. Meeting adjourned.
What are we going to do?